Hello and a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate, coming your way out of Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Washington is pushing for a regime change in Venezuela. It insists humanitarian aid that it's gathered together with its allies should go in. Now, many doubt Washington's good intentions behind this and argue that it's aimed at demonizing President Maduro and making Juan Guaido look like a good guy who wants to save the people from their misery. Now, Mike Pence has also met with some Latin American leaders in Colombia. He declared new U.S. sanctions against Maduro and urged those nations to follow the U.S. path in freezing the assets of PDVSA, that's Venezuela's state oil giant, to cut international cash flow to Caracas. Now, what is Washington's true intentions? How far will it go? Before debating the situation in Venezuela, let's cross over to our Caracas, where Press TV's correspondent Jesus Silva is standing by to walk us through the situation. Jesus, over to you.
The situation in Venezuela is the confrontation between the parliament that is led by Juan Guaido, the also self-proclaimed president, has no legal base to be known as president of Venezuela. And on the other hand, we have elected president Nicolas Maduro, who recently, last year, was elected for another six-year term. In this context, it is possible to see that the U.S. government and its allies in the region, such as Colombia and Brazil, are putting pressure, diplomatic pressure, against the Venezuelan government in order to force a scenario of regime change and also to produce destabilization in political terms within the Venezuelan population, which is currently divided into pro-Maduro followers and anti-Maduro followers. In this context, the recent events of the Venezuelan-Colombian border is part of an agenda, a political agenda that is led by the U.S. government in order to provoke a false flag operation to justify a military intervention against Venezuela. So far, there is no evidence that the Venezuelan military force has used improper force, any misbehavior by the Venezuelan soldiers. They were only defending the Venezuelan sovereignty, the nationality of the Venezuelan soil, and there is no serious evidence of human rights violations. Nonetheless, the opposition activists, many of them who are terrorists, pretend to create a scenario to make the international community believe that the Venezuelan government is using improper amount of military force. Mm-hmm. Such event has not been verified, and Venezuela will continue to impede the penetration of humanitarian aid, which may contain weapons in order to prepare terrorist groups inside Venezuela, as it has been seen and as it has occurred in other countries like Nicaragua, among others. That is pretty much the situation right now. And Caracas used the force of international law to defend himself from the U.S. meddling.
Okay, thank you for that. That was Jesus Silva, our correspondent, who joined us from Caracas, Venezuela. Now, people joining me in this debate today will be author and broadcaster Jonathan Fryer, who's joining us from London, and also professor of international human rights with the University of Pittsburgh, Daniel Kovalik, who is joining us out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Good to have you, both of you, with us, gentlemen. Let me begin with Jonathan Fryer. Jonathan, Vice President Mike Pence did not rule out military intervention to force President Nicolas Maduro from power. Also, a day earlier, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Maduro's days in office are numbered. Why has the U.S. ratcheted up its threats against the Venezuelan government?
Well, clearly the United States, or at least the U.S. government, would like to see regime change in Venezuela, and it had hoped that there would be an electoral change, in other words, that Mr. Maduro would be voted out. It's interesting that several European countries actually were arguing for elections, free and fair elections, to actually settle the issue. Because as your correspondent Jesus in Caracas rightly said, the country is deeply divided. It's split down the middle between those who support the government of Nicolas Maduro and those who are horrified by what's happened in recent years. Because since Mr. Maduro took over following the death of Hugo Chavez, the GDP has more than halved. Inflation has gone to astronomical levels, over 1,000,000% a year, unbelievable. And many people are suffering hugely in Venezuela at the moment, from food shortages, from medicine shortages, malaria incidence has rocketed. So the situation on the ground is very critical. And of course, American threatening military intervention does not help, and I think would be opposed by many other countries around the world. There's a sad history of US military intervention in the region, and it really is something we had hoped had is something of the past, but under Trump and Mike Pence, who's just as bad, apparently this devil has been reawakened.
Now let's go to Pittsburgh. Mike Pence has said that millions of Venezuelans urgently need humanitarian aid. Now, if that is the case, why doesn't Washington remove its sanctions from the country?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? We know the sanctions cost the Venezuelan economy last year alone over $20 billion. And the U.S. is just imposing more sanctions. So the idea that the U.S. is going to send a few shipments of aid while costing their economy billions of dollars is frankly a cruel joke. What it shows is that this has no motivation of humanitarian concern. This is a political maneuver. And we only need to listen to the Red Cross to know this. The Red Cross is the organization designated by the UN to observe whether humanitarian law is being followed. The Red Cross has said that this attempt by the U.S. to deliver humanitarian aid is not a humanitarian gesture, and they will have nothing to do with it. And that is absolutely correct. This is about an attempt at regime change. Yes, and again, if the U.S. cared truly about the situation in Venezuela, it would lift the sanctions and it would stop threatening military force.
Right. Now, to London, Jonathan, Mike Pence said in Bogota a couple of hours ago that 9 out of 10 Venezuelans are going hungry. Now, the UN rapporteur on Venezuela doesn't say such a thing at all. Of course, his report was never published, but we talked to him in the next interview. Now, where does Mike Pence get his information from? I mean, why don't they have an international body go to Venezuela and get first-hand account of stores and report the truth?
Well, certainly that figure of 90% of degrees of malnutrition has been widely circulated here in the media in Europe as well. It depends really how one defines malnutrition, because I think what we're talking about is not 90% of Venezuelans are on the brink of starvation, when it's nowhere near, for example, the situation that exists in Yemen, tragically, which really is a humanitarian disaster. What seems to be true from censuses that have been done in Venezuela by a number of public opinion poll surveys is that people are having to change their diets. They're no longer able to afford the sort of diet they had before. People are turning, for example, to root vegetables and things like cassava, which were always considered in the past to be poor people's food, and which now many ordinary people are eating because they cannot afford the food that's actually in the supermarkets. Some supermarkets are indeed half empty, but others have food, but people don't have enough money to buy it. And the money that they earn from the work is almost worthless.
All right. Daniel, 2 days before Pence's Colombia visit, U.S.-backed effort to get humanitarian aid into Venezuela via Colombia ended in violence. You know, two people got killed. Hundreds got wounded. Now, the question is, how come the U.S. is so adamant to get this aid into Venezuela? If it really cares about people, why should it place sanctions in the first place, like you mentioned? Also, Pence announced some new sanctions today.
Yes, well, clearly this attempt to bring aid in is an attempt to stoke violence, to provoke some sort of violent act that would justify a military intervention. That's clearly what is happening here. Both Cuban and Russian intelligence have said that U.S. special forces have moved into the region. Clearly, they've done it in anticipation that something's going to happen at the border, which will be a pretext for them to move in and overthrow the government. So this is a Trojan horse, and that's what Maduro's been saying, and he's absolutely right. And the Venezuelan government and military have every right to protect their borders from such an incident. And now we'll have to see if the U.S. will relent from this or will continue to engage in provocative acts against the government.
Now, Jonathan, the United Nations and also the Red Cross, like Daniel also mentioned, and also other relief organizations, they have refused to work with the United States on delivering aid to Venezuela. They say this is politically motivated. Does it not cast doubt on Washington's true intentions?
Well, I think it was a mistake for Washington really to believe that a U.S.-led aid operation could be without political problems. But we do have to acknowledge that it was actually Juan Guaido, the leader of the National Assembly, and as far as about 50 Western countries are concerned now, interim president of Venezuela, who called for aid. And neighboring countries such as Colombia in particular, but also Brazil and other Latin American countries were willing to send material. I think it would have been far better if this had been something handled by the Lima group of Latin American countries without American involvement, because as soon as Washington gets involved, then inevitably this does raise political issues. And whereas I wouldn't be quite as gloomy as Daniel in describing, as Maduro did, this as a Trojan horse, I believe that if it had been handled differently, it would have been better. But there is no denying that the Maduro government has closed the border with Colombia and with Brazil and has physically stopped aid going in. And the clashes that you mentioned, which led to two deaths at the weekend, including a 14-year-old boy, were at the hands of the Venezuelan military. And we have to acknowledge that the government has been using live ammunition as well as rubber bullets and other force against people who have been demonstrating for food or just trying to get out. And of course, 3 million Venezuelans have left the country.
Okay, Daniel, do you want to have the comments on that?
Well, I would say a few things about that. First of all, 6 million Colombians now live in Venezuela, having fled violence and deprivation there. And very few people are talking about a humanitarian crisis in Colombia, which also, by the way, has the largest internally displaced population on Earth at over 7 million people, which is even more than Syria. You know, this is a very selective and obsessive coverage of Venezuela to push regime change. And again, let's be clear, the fact that Guaido asked for the aid, he himself is a puppet of the United States. He declared himself president with no constitutional basis to do so because the U.S. urged him to do that. We know that. Mike Pence had called him the day before he did that and urged him to do it. This is all being orchestrated with the United States. To say that he is acting alone or that he has any standing to do anything, it just isn't true. You know, I'll just give you one, you know, glimpse into what Guaido has planned for their country. He is purported to name a new board to Venezuela's oil company, Citgo, and everyone he named to the board lives in the United States. Okay, this is about oil. This has nothing to do with bringing humanitarian aid in, and everything about taking control of Venezuela's oil, and John Bolton's been very open about that. That's the other thing. Look who's behind this. Trump, Bolton, Elliot Abrams, a war criminal, a guy who went to jail for his role in Iran-Contra. These are not good people. These are bad people. And they are up to no good. And the idea that Venezuela should accept anything of what they're saying or doing at face value is just incredible.
Now, Jonathan, President Trump has encouraged the Venezuelan military to defect and join the other side, and he's even threatened them that if they don't do that, they will lose everything. That's direct quotation by Mr. Trump. Now, Mike Pence also said that Maduro has usurped power and must go. Why should the U.S. make such a blatant intervention in another country's affairs?
Well, as we mentioned before, that unfortunately it has a long history of doing so over many, many years, and particularly in Latin America. Obviously, in recent years, the focus has been more what the United States has been doing in the Middle East. But historically, the first part of the 20th century and into the 1970s with Nicaragua, it was Latin America that was really seen as the United States' backyard. And according to the so-called Monroe Doctrine, Washington felt that it had a right, basically, to almost control who was in power and who wasn't. But I want to pick up the point that Daniel mentioned about when he said there was no constitutional basis for Juan Guaido claiming to be interim president. Under the Venezuelan constitution, if the president, the real president, current president, is deemed to be unfit, normally that would be medically unfit to rule, then the president of the National Assembly, who is indeed Juan Guaido, takes over. That's what's in the constitution. Now, of course, it's a moot point about whether Maduro is unfit or not. But what is definitely true is that there is massive corruption in Venezuela, in particular since Maduro took over. Hugo Chavez did many good things and helped the poor in the country. But since Maduro took over in 2013, the situation has deteriorated. And one of the reasons that so many people in the army, particularly the higher offices, support him is because they're involved in the corruption as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, Daniel, some observers argue that through the emergency aid, Washington and his allies are trying to give Guaido a savior's face and also depicting Maduro as a dictator who's keeping the people hungry. Let's have your take.
Yeah, well, I don't think that that is true. I mean, we have to look at why the economy has tanked since Maduro was elected. Number one, and we know this from the Independent of London, in addition to other publications, the U.S. and Saudi Arabia intentionally artificially depressed oil prices beginning in 2014, mostly aimed at Russia and Iran. But again, as the Independent of London pointed out, it destroyed Venezuela's economy. I mean, Venezuela gets about 78% of its revenue or so from oil. Oil prices in 2014 was from something like $120 a barrel to a low of $25 a barrel. You can see how that would just destroy the revenue Venezuela was generating, and that's exactly what happened. And then in 2015, Obama piled on with sanctions, and those sanctions have only increased over time. And so to put this all blame on Maduro is completely unfair. You know, has he made some mistakes and, you know, missteps in response to the sanctions and oil prices? Of course. But I would say criticizing him for that is like criticizing, you know, an abused domestic partner for not blocking the blows of her husband well enough. And that's exactly what's happening. The U.S. is bludgeoning Venezuela, starving Venezuela, and then blaming Venezuela for starving. This is classic. The U.S. did this against Allende in Chile, against Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran. This is, you know, we've seen this many times. Now it's moved to the next phase where it's going to try to provoke some sort of violence so that there can be a military intervention. So I think we need to look at why these things are happening. Meanwhile, the government, it should still be pointed out, under Maduro, is still spending over 70% of the revenue it's able to bring in on social programs, including building homes for the poor. And 2.5 million homes have been built since Chavez and Maduro came into power. You know, you assume a family of four, that's 10 million people housed out of 30 million people. That's not too bad. Right. Meanwhile, the government is providing subsidized food for people under the CLAP program. So, you know, to claim they're starving out their own population is simply untrue.
Okay. Now, Jonathan, I got another question, query. What could the Lima group meeting come up with? I mean, why should they get involved in another country's internal affairs? What's in it for them? Briefly, please, we're running short of time.
Well, yeah. Well, under the principle of responsibility to protect, which is developed by the United Nations, it's been agreed that regional groups have a role in trying to solve problems in countries that are going through some crisis, short of military intervention. And as I mentioned earlier, I personally would be in favor of the Lima group excluding the United States to come up with some sort of solution which will help relieve the problems in Venezuela and ideally have a genuine free and fair election so that then it can be proved who do the Venezuelan people want, that they want to stick with Maduro or accept Juan Guaido.
Mm-hmm. And Daniel, one last question for you. Where is Europe in this? I mean, it recognizes Juan Guaido a few days after he declares himself president, and today it's asking for caution and staying away from any sort of violence. Very briefly, please.
Look, I think Europe at heart is not going to be in favor of an intervention in Venezuela, but Europe is now very divided. It's also being, in many cases, run by right-wing governments. So I think Europe will be tentative and stay on the fence and basically support the winner of whoever, you know, comes out of this, the victor. That's
right.
Very clear.
Okay, on that note, we come to the end of this debate. Let me thank our guests. We had author and broadcaster Jonathan Fryer from London and Professor of International Human Rights with the University of Pittsburgh, Daniel Kovalik, who joined us from Pittsburgh. And thank you for watching this debate. We'll see you soon.